Now here we have Urs Malin, April 12, 2003, Persona, a workshop, tape 2 of 2.
That means one, not only in the interest of society, but also in the interest of the child himself, that means adaptation to social belongings, and that means strengthening the persona. And sometimes almost have a tendency to neglect that aspect. If the child or if the adult only becomes himself and everything is okay, that's not true. Because unadapted functioning in a society, in a school class, leads to secondary problems, which would become then primary problems. Okay, on the other hand, we as therapists want not only ego strengthening, but self strengthening. Help and keep the child becoming more of himself. Now, if and both is necessary. So, especially childhood, we have never built it. There is also a necessity of persona strengthening, of helping somebody adapt to certain social situations. Now, if that is emphasized too much, we come to what we saw last in a moment, we call self. That's great. If, on the other hand, the getting more of oneself is only valuable, then we have the danger of acting out as the thing which should be avoided or which should be omitted. Because for the child, you know, let's take the example of stealing. A child, a boy who experiences himself as becoming, as being completely dependent, and we underestimate the big problem of adopted children. Because adopted children have to deal with strangers who don't perceive themselves as strangers but going to the archetypes of parents. So we have an distinct strangers. The parents of adopted children think, we are parents, we do something good. And they do something good, but not in the eyes of the child. I worked with a few adopted children. Unfortunately, they were adopted not at a very early age, but later. And one Korean girl, I told him, who was adopted at the age of 5. When she was sitting in that lane, she was coming to some robbers who wanted to take her away. And she could not accept, and who could accept, that her mother had chosen to give her away. It's a terrible problem, which long term turned out to not to be good for the relationship between her parent and children. So now let's take the disturbing symptom of feeling. A child who has been always been adopted by parents who for him are strangers. They're very different from parents. Even now in Switzerland, they could be very, live in a rural place, very narrow-minded, and he coming from a background where his mother had to prostitute herself in order to survive. So stealing is healthy for him, and he didn't very tell. And you know, then I was asking him once, now, you know, for Christmas, and he said, well, for Christmas we can always take the cookies, which are there, and we can bring something and everything. And so I won't steal anymore. I said, well, Christmas is over, well, then I steal. So that moral instance hasn't been developed. So, as a matter of fact, the stealing means for him, or meant for him, becoming more autonomous. At the same time, he had more problems within that the community live, the parents got problems. So we have an enormous discrepancy between the psychological function of the symptom and the social creating more problems of the symptom. And I think, you know, that understanding of the steering, I just got now, and I didn't get it at the time. But we worked on that, and on the other hand, the self-strengthening would have been more important, but not to the point where the symptom would be more acted out. So there's a very delicate balance, and I sometimes say children's therapists can only make two basic mistakes. One would be not to have success, and the other would be to have success. Because then parents would become jealous. So you see that, and in a way, it's not only true for children, but it's children's therapy, it's also true for adults. For instance, adults who, within the framework of their complex, manage to have again and again problems with bosses, authority, and an authority complex. There again, some adaptation is necessary, some persona strengthening is necessary, and I have that very often in counseling for teachers. For instance, yeah, also sometimes some problems between the teachers and the students, and I knew the colleagues, and then you have to be very set to find a very settled balance between understanding things as well. Could you play a little bit in these moments? And playing is fixed to our time. And when it's integrated, it's wonderful. You know that if somebody can do the dust, if he can't do the teachers, if he can't teach, he teaches to teach. That's what my case. And if he can't teach to teach, he inspects.
In a situation like that, is it possible to help teach a child other ways to get along?
Could you specify?
Well, I'm thinking of something that we learned when about parenting a teen, and I put into practice with our daughter, was that if it's necessary for teens to engage in risk-taking behavior, and many teens engage in a type that we'd rather they didn't, with sex or drugs or fast cars or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's important for parents and teachers to make available risky things they can do that are acceptable. You know, we take risks, for example, to put their art before other people, to an art in our daughter's case, go on the internet, build sites, put her writing out where other people could read it and critique it, and do things which are a little scary to do, you know, put herself out into situations. And yet they're safe risks in the sense that they're not, they don't have legal consequences. And this is necessary as parents to find these, whether it's rock climbing or whatever it is that you can send your kids off to do, so that they can test themselves, substituting those for what they might find on the street.
Do you explain to them
what we're talking about? Or what they can do, test themselves.
Yeah. You know, I think the key word for that is staying in communication. In a mutual talking about things. And not, you know, the very often children find out themselves what they want to do. But it's so important, and it's something which is completely under-evaluated, that you think, well, once a child has reached the age of kindergarten, then everything is gained and we can leave them by themselves. Well, no, it's the opposite. There are so many impressions even in school, and when the children cannot share that with their parents, and when they are not listened to, then there's a divorce. Because then they, the degree of risk, which is always many abilities there, is becoming too big because unconsciously there is, especially in adolescence, also that malignant regressive tendency to go back to mother, but to the devouring bad mother. So risk is very often not, or the danger of risk is not clumsiness, but unconscious regression. And when you can balance that as a good mother, as a good father, then that's what you can be. And that's not only that what you can do as parents, but that's what you're supposed to do. So I'm very glad what you said about that. And you know, if something seems maybe strange to you, children very often know what's good for them and what fits them.
Sorry, could you explain once more what that acting out is?
Acting out is more and more stealing, without understanding what it means. Or more lying. Or more and more attacking other people, becoming aggressive. Whereas aggressiveness is something which is a force which is so important in life. In order to stand, you want to get self-knocked down. Are there other comments about that? I think it's educationally speaking and therapeutic speaking is something very important.
Okay, I'm curious about one thing. You know, your notion of persona. And if you notice kids at certain ages, they will try on all sorts of different clothes or dress in their parents' clothes and things like that.
Yeah.
And I sort of look at that as trying on different personas.
Okay.
Is the self built through persona, through things like that?
You know, I see it in a way like in the same concept which I saw before. The persona in periods of transition provides some sort of a protective shell that your inner self may go through these stages of transition. Now, the danger is the identifying with the persona and the neglecting of the transformative process which should go on in an inclusive way within. I don't agree at all with the popular Jungian concept that first half of life has to be extroverted and second half rather introverted. And not at all, because in adolescence, with all seeming extroversion, there is enormous introversion in fantasy and I think as well. So there's always both, and sometimes not to be limited to stages of life, there are more introverted things and there are more introverted things. And I think, you know, what we said before, you face each big transition individually. Individual individuality has something to do, and you face it alone. So you need, especially in phases of transition, you need that protective persona which can look extremely extroverted. Okay, now I would like to, that would be interesting how you reacted, to show you a part of a video, probably you are much more familiar with it than me. And in Europe, it's an American beauty contest, and one with children. It's a very, very small tumor, and it's at least as interesting and important to look at mothers. And there, you know, I really am afraid that what we have discussed before about the shallowness of beauty and the one-sidedness and everything, here it's becoming so evident that I would really like you to comment on it because you're probably really not familiar with that. Would you like to see that?
Yes.
Tell us if you can envy signalize that you should develop what you are envious of in to a certain extent and in a way which is compatible with you. There was yesterday a question, what's when your persona does not fit your ideal at all? Then there's the danger of narcissistic projection on the children. The children should develop what you really would have liked for yourself. So it's not yet envy. The envy comes the moment, paradoxically, when the child develops it. That's the struggle of gypsy. But it's the pure projection on your child, and by that, not giving the child the possibility of developing the child's one own self. And that's really the big danger of the false self and whatever follows out of it. Now, you know, I think your reaction of disgust and being completely shocked is absolutely understandable. But let's adapt for just a moment a therapeutical attitude. When we are judgmental, we won't help me with the children from other parents. What would you suggest? How would one have to deal as a friend, as a neighbor, as a therapist with these mothers?
Well,
I like to ask because that's what that was a really wonderful question.
You know, I'm a little bit sensitive when we are only judgmental.
Yeah. Then things for us are not over, the bads are out there, mm-hmm. and things are, the world is okay again. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that.
These children love to dress up, they love to play, they love to do some of these things. So it's the mother's sort of ending probably of that part. But the mothers, the children at that age will go to anyone to get the mother's love. And I think that's what they're doing. And I think it's a kind of reverse mothering that's prevalent throughout our culture where the child provides the parent, the parent. And in this case, the parent is more like a four-year-old. And the child is expected to carry adult responsibilities in a way. And I've worked with women who, you know, when they turn to their children to meet their own needs, inappropriately. Usually they can't stand their own mothers. You know, it's all part of the same dynamic.
Yes.
The reverse, and that's the basic narcissistic
yes.
thing that Alice Moore is. It's a very hard pill to swallow for a woman
yes.
that I'm using this child to meet my needs, to mother me. It's a very hard. But when women can really face that, and you don't just you know, shoving down her throat. You have to work with it for a while. It takes some work, but amazing things happen.
Yeah.
Because with consciousness, no woman is going to do that.
No. It's a very, if not the only adequate answer there. And Jung said, you know, when you, and he was a little bit one side of that, mm-hmm. but if a child has problems, you have to treat the parents, which of course usually is not possible. So you have to work with the child as well. But working with the parents, I think that is absolutely the way, because these parents are in an extreme need of something,
mm-hmm.
and they hope that need will be fulfilled by their help. And you know, we have the same dynamics. The best one, the most beautiful one, for some time she is the not the prince, but the queen, the mother of the princess. And when we take that archetypal dynamism serious, I think we are better able to help the mothers. Now,
and one of the things that has to happen is that the mother of the four-year-old has to be able to stop mothering her own mother. And to say, you're the mother, I'm the daughter. And that's an enormous act, an enormous risk. Because everybody's sure that it's going to kill them. I mean, people really have a hard time doing it. And then just to see that they get mothering. And so themselves from their mothers, they ask for it, because usually the mothers are, you know, have gotten some wisdom after a while, and are ready for it. So it's a wonderful thing to see happen, but it doesn't happen often enough.
But it's also, the person is acknowledging one's own needs, and very often. And the real needs, not the needs which are projected on the children.
And in the right direction.
Yes, absolutely.
From the right place.
Absolutely.
Christians could also be the father, then.
Yes, because, you know, mothering and fathering can come both for mother and father. Sometimes from very often today from one person alone. But it's important that that's a different issue, and that the parent who is raising the child alone is conscious of both, of the necessity of both functions.
So, for example, my father always used to get me to play the piano when company was there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something similar?
Well, in any case, it's something very, probably very disagreeable experience for a child.
I was always curious.
Yeah, exactly. But that's a good way.
Oh,
yeah. So that's very, that's an aggressive reaction. That's very good.
Unless you like to play piano for company.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, but so, you know, we have very much tendency to speak of children, assuming that they are the light. They are at least as much as they could. Differences between children as between adults. And some like to perform, and some don't.
I was at a session one time. It was conducted by a woman who was an Episcopal minister, and she was talking about messages that parents give children. And one of the things that stuck with me is that she said that mothers expect daughters to get more out of their lives than they did, but if they do, they will hate them for it.
Exactly.
Don't dare pass me.
Absolutely. That double bind.
Don't
voice that.
Don't
voice that. It's a different dynamic. It can be comparable. But it's not identical. You know, and that, in a way, has in my experience or committed to do that, the role of the father compared to 1500 years ago has never been diminished. Fathers tend today much more to be absent fathers. And that's why the dynamism is subliminal, and the dynamism between mother and daughter is can be seen more easily.
But I think that trend is changing again, especially here.
Mm-hmm.
I see that my sons are much more involved with his children than their father was with them.
Yeah,
because
but
I
you know, what I experience, absolutely. But very often it's the mothering function of the father which today is expected.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I see young couples in a party, and the child has to be happy and to be good.
Changed,
yeah. has to be changed. So in one gracious autonomy, mother tells father please do it. Or for instance, where I go swimming, you know, in the men's water, there is a So it's not we have the fathering aspect, but the mothering aspect of father, which is what we call by fathers is emphasized.
Yeah, but they also play ball with
that's
them.
Good.
They do a lot.
That's very good.
Yeah, it's expected now from a father.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the father that was involved there,
yeah,
even creepier than the
mother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's not so creepy. They over-sexualize children and for a different reason, don't they?
Yeah, felt like it. It felt like it. Yeah.
That's an interesting
The tape in our discussion reminded me of something you said last night that just stood out, and I'm remembering it, which was that first has to come the no,
yes,
the ability to say no before there can ever be a true, yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of linking with what you were just talking about. We've mentioned Winnicott, who's another theorist, a couple of times, and Winnicott talks about how the parent's job is to be able to withstand the ruthless aggressiveness of the child and the child's no and to still survive, and that that's the root of all creativity, that the child has to be able to say no and ruthlessly disagree with the parent to be able to be an individual and to be creative. And these little girls, one wonders, could they ever have said no to anybody? I mean, it's all me,
absolutely,
mother's need.
Absolutely.
I've had two thoughts watching this. One is, while I have this sort of early visceral response to, how is it like and different from all the other things parents encourage their children to do? Sometimes you encourage your young child to try something they haven't tried before. Try working with play, or try doing this or that. And some children have a drive. We had neighbors, we had a younger daughter who became a competitive swimmer, and so the parents are continually driving her to swimming pools to practice and compete and all that. And how much of that comes from the child's desire to be competitive in some arena and versus the parents expecting it. Our parents expecting their child to excel academically, pushing them into more and more difficult academic programs. How is it like and different from that?
That's a very important issue. And there are two aspects to it. One, more specifically connected with our topic, here we have to do with building up a complete persona. And there is not much skill involved. Was the child who sang Gypsy sang incredibly long.
Both of them.
And these few movements, it's like little puppets, but it's not a real achievement or something. So they learn to be admired for what, for the appearance, for the persona. And that makes it even more dangerous to develop into a false self. Besides, with the older girls who are doing that, unless they have some self-irony where they know that they are playing. It's a little bit of a stupid game, beauty contest, but as long as they can see those games, that's okay. And children cannot make that difference. Children have no sense of irony at all. Now, second, that's another issue we need to address. The mothers of swimming, competitive swimmers, of ice skating children, of tennis children. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be, after it took a very long time, there seems to be symbiosis. And then comes a critical point where much later than usually which has to be expected in the age of gaining autonomy, much later, where the child does not want to be the child anymore. It says no. Now, if the child, what is rarely the case, is stronger, the career is shattered. That's finished. But usually, these mothers are so strong, and they force their will, and it's like that route towards autonomy of the child is broken, and it's a monomaniac thing. The sport or the achievement takes part of everything. All other activities become secondary, and then career will can go on. But it has an aspect where really there is a power struggle between usually mother and child, because the mother takes care of the brain. You know that, you know that, when you choose an old in America, Hinckley's the tennis star. He was quite a few years number one. And there's an interesting symbiosis between mother and her, which is also characterized by ambivalence, because mother is also coaching her. And sometimes Martina wanted to break out, and then she came back again, because her career was dependent on the participation of the mother. It's an unconscious, complete symbiosis. And, you know, the, and then we have a third aspect to it, which is very, which now becoming conscious, but in that with all these sport careers or also ballet dancing careers, on a certain point you're finished. And then if there's nothing else, comes the big crisis. And that's why this, you know, there's a quite a famous book by Swiss psychologist, The Drama of the Gifted Child. She's describing narcissistic developments. And the more one-sided an education is, or a training is, or a pushing is, the more you have success in that area, but the more also you are being one-sided. And that's a great, great thing. And you know, we have, as a matter of fact, we face the same question we faced this morning in with being beautiful, of course, which has to do with persona, more than anything, but persona onto which it projects beauty, and underdeveloping other aspects. Now, why is it so fascinating? Why are we so fascinated if, as long as somebody is in tennis, world number one, and you know, when they are in actuality, it's keywords, when they are interviewed, it's so completely stupid. The questions are sometimes even more stupid than the answers. But, it's absolutely uninteresting. But everyone is fascinated. But I got in that curve, I got a little bit out of control, and then, so
winning has become so meaningless because it's now 1/100th of a second. I mean, what is the difference?
That is my main question.
But I mean, it doesn't mean that he's better than the other person.
No, but we see that in every sport, in motor racing, in everything.
It's become so...
And that's why I really ask myself, once the archetype ended, because people are fascinated.
What? I thought about that.
Huh? Mm-hmm. And when you're... You know, I think it's interesting to see a soccer game. It's, I think, for non-Americans, it's absolutely understandable to watch a baseball game, because you never get it. but for Americans, it's absolutely fascinating. Then you have the team, you have skill and so on. That's something which seems to me interesting, but being split second faster down the hill. So, what's the archetype behind it?
For a lot of Americans, the thing about soccer that they like watching is that the scores are so low.
It's what?
That the scores are so low. The whole object is scoring. You know, so like since you have like tie matches or just like low scoring. You know, it's like football. You know, tie, it's such a
Well, what is the archetype of down close?
Maybe, no, it's just crossed my mind now. Ball games and running games were also, and you must correct me, very popular with old Middle American culture, like the Aztecs. And the fastest one was chosen to be sacrificed to the gods. well, you know, that has to be, that is on the topic.
What people think of, oh, I run a little bit less fast.
I would be on the safe side. But as soon as a society is completely not rooted in but identical with the collective unconscious, then individual life does not play a part. And if you are the best, the fastest, you are the chosen by God. And maybe it's a religious occupation.
Well, you sacrifice
a technified, now technified but religious aspect. Yeah.
And then you're sacrificed and you're out of the race.
Well, not only out of the race, of course. then you are transforming, you're taking up into
another level too.
Absolutely. It's a now we come to across very interesting thing, and that unfortunately is taped because you can make use of it, and I have found it out now. So you say, well, that was the time when we were
the inventor.
What?
The inventor.
Yes. Well, I'm not interested in writing too much anyway. But it's probably the archetype of transformation, which is acted out in a technical way. That's really interesting point.
Yeah.
I think it's different.
Yeah.
I think it's different.
The star,
oh, you asked two good questions.
It's the turning point.
Yeah.
It's the turning point.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
You get to the top.
Yeah.
And then it turns.
That was what it was about the male path.
The
male path, I think, and at the end, don't have the chance to get together in pets anymore and go off and you know, engage in warfare or engage in and so they get together to discuss the sports and go to the games and you know sort of a male bond.
I think probably that might be interesting to do with the story. Sports which are played in a team represent a later development from that. Primarily, who is the fastest?
Mm-hmm.
What is the hero? Yeah. Is there any part of the hero?
But the hero would connect more, for instance, with the sports like boxing. He's the one who fights the other one. So the red part of fencing and all the martial arts to me are much more related to the hero, whereas the one who's fastest would but the person which underlying archetype is acting goes more to that who is the chosen, who will be transformed, who is the chosen.
But there's another element of hero, though. I mean, certainly you have people who want to identify with the hero, which creates the hero worship. But if you go back to the times of chivalry, where you have people competing and jousts and all that sort of thing, it seemed to me to be a societal part of the society, part of the culture, that took these young men and created symbolic activities for them to participate in so that they did not go to war with each other. So that to go to war with each other.
Yeah.
It somehow took the impulses to fight and channeled them in a way that was not destructive to society.
I would say yes and no, but that's certainly what happened, and that's also an aspect of sports today. But unfortunately, as we can see now, we could see the story, it does not prevent acting out in war. It's a possibility, but probably the falling into acting out or maybe even the archetype of war sometimes proves to be stronger than the symbolic expression.
But if you look at feudal societies were very much, very pyramid structures,
mm-hmm.
where you had a huge number of people at the lower levels and a few people at the higher levels, mm-hmm. and you needed to maintain that pyramid. And so if you project the image of invincibility at the top of the pyramid, it stays stable.
Yes, absolutely. That's good. Absolutely.
You know, there's a parallel here between this top of the pyramid point where the man becomes the god, number one.
Yeah.
And the pictures we looked at before, where the woman becomes more and more spiritualized, and the last picture is just the head, and you can see she's yes. Identify with the God. Yeah. And there's a piece that's left out in those pictures that I connect the beginning with the end pictures. And that's the key, the point of going from up there to down there, from only head to a body poor creature, woman. Mm-hmm. If you take the whole thing as one theory, and it's, you know, the Bill of Mysteries images where there's a mask, you have to look in the eyes of the mask. The initiation for women in Pompeii. And anyhow, there's a phase where one has identified, is in danger of identifying with the God. Mm-hmm. The woman with the big eyes on the head.
Yeah,
yeah. The God who's just one first place.
Yeah.
And that image in these series of pictures is the angel with a whip called the flagellating angel who brings the initiate back to humility. And that we saw in the subsequent images of the woman, there was humility.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't, you know, you could carry it on as part of the sequence.
Yep.
The whole goal of that initiation is full body womanhood.
Yep.
And it's whatever that is for men and women.
Yep.
Full body womanhood.
Now, that leads us to I would suggest that we just look at the next video, and then make a little break. And that video has to do, as I said yesterday already, with the function of body as a persona forming creature, I would always say. And she's really long living because she has been first in a toy exhibition in New York in 1959. So in her first 30 years, Barbie has been sold 450 million times. In Germany, every girl between 3 and 10 years owns 4. In the USA, 8. Every 2 seconds, a Barbie doll is sold somewhere in the world. Worldwide, exist 700 million Barbies. All so far, by joining their little hands, they go 3 times around the earth. And they possess more than 1 billion of shoes. Now, something which is very sad for us, Ken is only moving 1 to 20 or 1 to 30. And no one wants to speak about popular society, it's certainly goes wrong. What?
Oh, we knew a boy growing up the same time our daughter was growing up, and he had the G.I. Joe, all the G.I. Joe figures, which were much more fun than her, because all their friends knew. They had lots of different clothes. They were actually...
But it was not
Ken. Play with.
Okay.
No, but they were G.I. Joe. And not all of them were G.I. Joe, and they were very impressed with the clothes and everything.
Now, as a human being, you know, Barbie would be a monster, because she would have 99 centimeters of circumference of breast, 48 of weight, and 84 of hip. Then we have video games, Barbie as Sleeping Beauty. That's interesting, connecting with video. Barbie with tattoos. Barbie race and ride. She can... Now what can feed the horse of Barbie and of Barbie and one feed the strawberry? So apples. I don't know whether the horse would like that. The important question, according to a magazine, is what was projected and reported by the girls, and attach great importance of being dressed correctly for each occasion. How do they do my hair today? I like to relax in the foam bed after having drained before in order to keep in shape. When I'm on the catwalk at the side of the actual top models, I'm totally happy. Now, I also made some excerpts of Barbies around the world, and I think that would be interesting to see Barbie as a persona for the model, and like that, giving girls the possibility to develop behind that shell facade. But also, I mentioned that yesterday, to see that young woman who
totally identify with Barbara.
What?
When I came back, and then came to the group, what struck me the first time here is when she had a woman who was acting out Cinderella's role. Because she only had to be at home and work, and she wanted to be that princess. And it is absolutely strange probably to all of us. But since usually today you don't have these wonderful fairy godmothers anymore, they are substituted by plastic surgeons. And you have to pay the price for it. Can you understand what she did and why she did it? Or is it completely...
Well, it definitely doesn't seem normal, but I don't feel negatively about it for her. She knew what she did, what she wanted. She did it, so it's her life to model the way she wants to.
Yes,
she
articulated
very
much. Yes, absolutely.
Very aware.
Absolutely.
I felt sad though that she couldn't grow into that stronger person. That she felt that there was a needed dichotomy between being sensitive and being strong, and she wasn't able to understand that you could have those two things together and really be stronger and more sensitive. And so that felt really sad to me.
It seemed to me her story was in parallel to that of a transgender person in a way.
Yes, absolutely.
She saw herself as having a certain kind of innocence and simplicity in which she wanted reflected in her face. She didn't want that face of a strong woman. She wanted the face of someone who was simple and beautiful. The transgender person for the same reason. Well, I work with a number of people. I work in the city, and I work with quite active, a surprising number of people who are transgender, who are transgender surgery, and how are they going to life?
And
I don't know the people I'm thinking of. I don't know closely enough to know that about their life. But I do know that I interact with them in the work setting in the same way I would interact anyone else of the sex they've chosen. It seems to work out in terms of professional relationships.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a different direction, but it seems to me you're talking about here a collective persona. And is that a category that you can, I mean, when you look at, the preoccupation with automobiles or the things which go on in a culture, is that some expression of a collective psychic, the same function that you talk about an individual's persona, you can see going on among a large number of people and is fulfilling the same functions, everything would be generally parallel, you could look at it and analyze it in the same sense.
You know, the thing is, every persona has that collective element to it, but the more you go into the collective persona, the more you're in danger to give up the other aspects which I have pointed out.
I was just going to say, I was wondering how she would have looked had she just changed her hair. Because that was a real difference.
Yes, it made a great difference.
And if she changed the sort of attitude she had, if somehow she could have softened up a little and felt her dependence, and put on the makeup, obviously she's made up. I didn't think her old face was so bad, actually.
No.
It probably looked like the other face, only the new face had all blown up upper lip. It's such a sign of...
Do you think she wanted... She must have wanted to be Barbie...
She wanted to be Barbie.
Right.
Absolutely. She wanted to be Barbie.
Right. She said it was a professional Barbie.
Yes, exactly.
And I would, though, do you really think that she's very happy? I mean, what? How do you draw that conclusion that she is happy?
Maybe it's perfection, maybe it's, I think it's an impression. However, I would have liked to add question, how long?
Yeah. And the very fact that she seems to have to explain herself and maybe, you know, that was an interview of course, that's why she did, but she had this you know, she's got to explain herself, and she has this defensiveness about her almost.
Yeah.
But
she's a role model for other girls.
Yeah.
You know, though, what she's going to have and do that no other Barbie will do, you're going to have one day a 65-year-old Barbie.
Yes.
Which will be very interesting.
Well, yes, absolutely. Excellent.
Yeah, like the
absolutely.
But in a way that's just an extension of buying nicer shoes, buying nicer clothes, getting another hairdo. You're just going a little bit beyond that.
Yeah.
And what she's doing is she is taking an image she had when she was a child of what she would look like if she were totally capable, and she's actualizing that image.
She's not going to be able to do it for very long.
Yeah. None of us can.
Well, that's what I mean. If she can't accept herself, if she has to be Barbie, how's she going to be a 65-year-old Barbie?
Well, maybe she will become a 65-year-old Barbie, and then they will put them on the market.
Made me feel it differently than just clothes or shoes. And she said, when I was a little girl, I led this very boring life and had to stay at home. And a Barbie doll is somebody that, you know, I could imagine her doing anything she wanted to do. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something, I can't remember her exact words, it was something put on her. So I thought it was much deeper than this. Somehow the Barbie doll means something to her about being able to be autonomous. And so in a very odd way, then, she had to turn herself into that. I mean, I saw it as a much more complicated thing than changing just the clothes or even the persona. It had something deeper to do with this lonely little girl who the doll could be what she wanted, but she had to stay home and study and lead the boring life. So it was all tied in with all of that. I found it quite disturbing.
I think I sort of relate to what she said. It's almost like she projected her spirit into the doll, mm-hmm. and by having this operation, she took it back.
Yes, thank you.
But contrast this with the two women who had devils inside, and only those devils represented the active principle. Here's a woman who the active principle has not become a devil.
Mm-hmm. She got rid of her active and totally.
I was not strong. I don't want anyone to see me as strong. I'm.
I know she was so split. And she, you know, when she was young, she was so identified with Mensa. She was very proud of it, but if she was so Mensa, why does she have to study so hard? You know, I mean, that's interesting, isn't it?
It was wicked stepmother to make her say no.
She means you don't have to study.
Yeah, that's
And maybe, you know, she put it, and we don't know anything, unfortunately, about the representation of the chapter, but maybe she would fit into what we said, and that in actually into narcissistic projection of the parents is becoming active. So she, and maybe by trying to escape that image of the intelligent Mensa girl, she escaped, and that's something which I observe very often. She escaped into another kind of persona, but she kept the pattern. And escaping into something which gave her... you could say it's shadow. Yeah, it's shadow of intelligence. But she kept the pattern of identifying with something where she would be faced.
Beauty or brains.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Well, in terms of that person, I was worried about that person, but if that person had a child, I would be concerned.
Yeah.
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 One thing is, listening to her, I didn't hear defensiveness in her voice. I didn't quite hear that. But one of the things that she did mention, she got put ahead of a year in school, and some other things that it's very common to see in a similar situation myself. That the child who's been put ahead in school like that early on, it's sort of the problem with the gifted girl or the gifted child, that they are, if they're with their own age mates, they're with children who have the same sort of psychological and social age as
intellectually they may get ahead, but emotionally they're with their own issues. But when they get put ahead, they can develop, I developed it, that the feeling of being sick, in the sense that you're with people who may be closer to your intellectual level, and we still actually be voting with them on intellectually, but you develop this feeling that they're going to find out I'm sick. At some point they're going to find out that I'm not really what they think I am. And so you get this real feeling of illegitimacy in your self-identity that can follow you all the way through school. Even though the parents and the teachers are all saying, well, you're supposed to take some pills and do all this stuff, but you keep thinking, yeah, when's the other shoe going to drop? And they're going to find out it's all a fake. I don't know, one person is really doing the same thing, even if they weren't good again. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of a common.
Well, and it creates a defense if they're already used to come and stay for it, this whole conflict is going to be good. But I could hear elements of that in my
community. Okay, I'm sure we have already.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright C.G. Ewing Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.